Take your Bibles, if you would. Open up to Psalm number 40. It's kind of a longer psalm, but we'll read all of it. When you find your place, you can go ahead and stand out of respect for God's Word. I'll start there in verse number 1 of Psalm number 40. This is David talking. He says, "I waited patiently for the Lord, and He inclined unto me and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of an horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock, and established my goings. And He hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and fear, and shall trust in Thee, Lord." Sorry, "shall trust in the Lord. Blessed is that man that maketh the Lord his trust, and respecteth not the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies. Many, O my Lord, many, O Lord my God, are Thy wonderful works which Thou hast done, and Thy thoughts which are to usward. They cannot be reckoned up in order unto Thee. If I would declare and speak of them, they are more than can be numbered. Sacrifice and offering Thou didst not desire. Mine ears hast Thou opened. Burnt offering and sin offering hast Thou not required. Then said I, Lo, I come. In the volume of the book it is written of me, I delight to do Thy will, O my God. Yea, Thy law is within my heart. I have preached righteousness in the great congregation. Lo, I have not refrained my lips, O Lord, Thou knowest. I have not hid Thy righteousness within my heart. I have declared Thy righteousness and Thy salvation. I have not concealed Thy loving kindness and Thy truth from the great congregation. Withhold not Thou Thy tender mercies from me, O Lord. Let Thy loving kindness and Thy truth continually preserve me. For innumerable evils have compassed me about. Mine iniquities have taken hold upon me, so that I am not able to look up. They are more than the hairs of mine head. Therefore my heart faileth me. Be pleased, O Lord, to deliver me. O Lord, make haste to help me. Let them be ashamed and confounded together that seek after my soul to destroy it. Let them be driven backward and put to shame that wish me evil. Let them be desolate for a reward of their shame that say unto me, Aha, aha. Let all those that seek Thee rejoice and be glad in Thee. Let such as love Thy salvation say continually, The Lord be magnified. But I am poor and needy. Yet the Lord thinketh upon me. Thou art my help and my deliverer. Make no tarrying, O my God." You know, the far country didn't seem so bad at first. The young man, he had more than enough to pay for everything that he needed. He was living like a king. He went into the finest restaurants and he bought whatever meals he wanted to buy, and he had more food than he could ever eat. And he went to the nicest inn that the town had to offer, and he slept on the nicest bed, and he had the nicest slippers in the morning when he woke up, and he woke up in the morning and he had the nicest coffee that was in the town, and this young man was just living it up. He had bucked against the system. And he had told his father, "Father, I want my inheritance now. I want it early, before you died." He had broken his father's heart, but he got what he wanted. And you know what? It was working out for him. So there he was in the far country, living like a king, until the famine hit. Well, before the famine, really, he had wasted all of his money. He apparently hadn't paid attention in economics class. I don't know. But he hadn't paid attention to his savings account, and all of his money was gone. And suddenly he was broke, and the inn kicked him out. He couldn't pay for the bed and the slippers anymore. And he went to the restaurant, and all of the waiters and the cooks that he thought he had been friends with, they wouldn't feed him anymore. Because turns out you got to pay to eat. He didn't have any money. So he thought, well, you know, it's bad, but I can work. I'll go find a farmer. I'll go work for a farmer. Farmers have food. I'll eat their food. I'll earn my wages. It won't be that bad. And that's when the famine hit. No farmer could hire him. The farmers couldn't afford to hire him. Their crops weren't growing. They didn't have the money coming in for it. And they couldn't possibly feed another mouth because their crops were all dying. They needed all of their food they could scrape together for their families. The only man he could find to hire him was a pig farmer. So here he stands, ankle deep in pig mud, carrying a few buckets of slop. So this young man sets a couple buckets down on the ground, takes the one bucket and dumps it into the trough. He can't help but think about when he turned his back on his father. He remembered the tears going down his father's face. And he remembered how heartbroken he was as he asked his son, "Son, please don't do this. Think about what you're doing. You don't have to go." He turned his back on his father and he left. And this young man realized, what I've done to my father, I can't erase that. I can't wash that away. It stained my entire life because of what I did to my father. I broke his heart. Picked up another bucket of slop and dumped it into the trough. And he thought about all of the good times that he had had and how he enjoyed life in the far country. It wasn't worth it, you know. He thought about how he had thought his plan would work, but it didn't. He knew what everyone told him to do. He had talked to his friends about it. He had talked to his counselors about it. He had told them, "You know what? I think I can get my inheritance early. I'm not getting anywhere with Dad around here. I'm not advancing. I'm not going to get to where I want to be. I'm just going to get my inheritance early." And they told him, "No, don't do that. That's foolish. Your father has this plan for you. He's taking care of you. Don't do that." He bucked against the system, got his money early. He was broke. He dumped the final bucket of slop into the trough and just kind of stared down at it for a minute. All the pigs were already eating. And his stomach growled. He hadn't eaten a couple days maybe. And he just... it was gnawing at him, the hunger, the pain. And he looked down into the trough and... partly out of curiosity, partly just... He didn't know what else to do, what else to think. He reached down and he grabbed a handful of the slop. It was already dirty from the pigs. They had been eating and slobbering on it. And it was gross. He looked at that slop in his hand and he brought it closer to his face and he couldn't stand the smell. He pulled it away from his face and he thought, "What am I doing?" Threw the slop down and he thought, "Even my father's servants have enough food to eat. Even my father's servants have enough clothes to wear and they're taken care of. I've heard him as his son. Maybe he'll forgive me. Maybe he'll take me back." And so the son left the pigs, left the slop, and climbed out of the pigsty and he started on the long road back to the father. While he was still a far ways away, the father saw him. He hadn't left his window. And he saw off in the distance his son was coming home. And he ran out and he met his son. And when the father came to him, the son fell on his knees and he said, "Father, I'm sorry. I've hurt you. I've broken your heart. I shouldn't have ever done what I did." But before he could even finish, he had been practicing his soliloquy the whole walk back. And before he could even finish, his father took his hand, which still smelled like the pig slop, and he looked back to the house and he shouted, "Kill the fatted calf. Get a meal ready. Bring out some clean clothes. My son is back." And so the father took him. He still smelled like the pigs. His feet were still dirty from the mud. And he put a clean robe on him And he fed him and he took care of him and he brought him back into his fold. The father. And took care of his needs and took him out of his trouble. And you know, I imagine after that, the son spent the rest of his life singing the praises of his father. He just every opportunity that he got, he couldn't help but tell people, look, I hurt my father. You know who my father is, the rich man in town? Yeah, the one with all the servants. He employed your son, didn't he? And your son, didn't he? And he let your mother come in and clean the house for him when she needed work. And he let your father come in and work in his fields. And yeah, my father, I hurt him. I hurt him so badly. And I had been brought down to the pigsty and I was filthy and I was hungry and life hadn't gone how I thought it would go. And I was surrounded by trouble, innumerable evils on all sides. The father brought me back and he cared for me and he loved me. I imagine that's what the son did. And we understand it's a parable. That wasn't a real story, but you understand if you were in that position, isn't that what you would have done? I wonder if maybe the prodigal son would have sounded a lot like what David sounded like here in this psalm. Look there in verse 1 of Psalm 40. David says, I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of an horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock, and established my goings. And he hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it, and fear, and shall trust in the Lord. David sang the praises of God, because God had brought him up out of the miry pit. I don't know if this was a real pit that David was in. But have you ever felt like you were in a pit? You know, maybe the life circumstances around you, maybe you had health concerns or you had financial concerns, you had relationship problems, people had hurt you. Your relationships with your family or your friends were not what they ought to have been. And concerns like that can make us feel like we're in a pit. And what's worse than that is that our own sin can make the pit worse. And things are already bad enough with everything that's going wrong. And then we've sinned and we've slipped farther and farther into the quicksand and we can't get up and it's pulling us deeper and deeper as if we're going to drown. Have you ever felt that way? I know I have. But I've found just what David has found, that God I've cried unto the Lord, and He heard me, and He lifted me up out of the pit, and He set my feet upon a rock. You know, David is saying, look, even though I was in this pit, I was surrounded by trouble, I was surrounded by evil, and yet God established me, and set me on the rock. He brought me out of the pit. You know, the concerns and the problems of this world could not reach David where God had placed him. I've had times where I had maybe two decisions that I could have made, and I didn't know which one was right. Maybe this one made sense, but this one I had peace about, and I just said, God, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to do what I have peace about. You know what? Even though it didn't make sense, I chose to follow God. I chose to do what He gave me peace to do. And it was like He had set me on a rock. He had established my feet. And I wasn't in fear of slipping into the pit. I wasn't afraid of falling because God had established my feet. And you know what happens is that whenever your feet are established, when God has taken you out of the pit, you can't help but sing praises to God. That's what David says in verse 3, that he hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and fear and shall trust in the Lord. Look there at verse 5. Many, O Lord my God, are thy wonderful works which thou hast done, and thy thoughts which are to usward. Isn't that a great thought, that God's thoughts are to usward? They, and thy thoughts which are to usward, they cannot be reckoned up in order unto thee. If I would declare and speak of them, they are more than can be numbered. So David's saying, how can I even begin to describe how good you have been to me, God? You've taken me out of the pit. You've set my feet on the rock. Many are your wonderful works. Many are wonderful are your thoughts that are even to me. I can't even begin to explain how wonderful they are. But David still tried to. He had a history, a past, of trying to tell other folks about how good God had been. Look there in verse 6. Sacrifice and offering thou didst not desire. Mine ears hast thou opened. Burnt offerings and sin offering hast thou not required. Well, that's kind of a strange verse in the middle of this, isn't it? David's talking about how good God is, how God had delivered him, and how he can't even begin to describe God's goodness. And then he says, sacrifice and offering you didn't even desire. So what is he talking about? This is what I believe David is saying. He's saying, God, you are so good that even you wanted my heart. The sacrifice and the offerings, yes, God wanted Israel to do that. We understand. It was symbolic. It was supposed to be a message to others. It was supposed to point others to Christ. We understand that. But David said, first and foremost, you wanted my heart. Keep your place there in Psalm 40 and turn over to Malachi. It's the last book in the Old Testament. Malachi chapter 1. And this is the prophet Malachi speaking. God gave him the words to say, and he's speaking to the nation of Israel. In Malachi chapter 1, verse 7, he says, ye offer polluted bread upon mine altar, and ye say, wherein have we polluted thee? In that ye say, the table of the Lord is contemptible. And if ye offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? And if ye offer the lame and sick, is it not evil? They weren't supposed to offer the sickly animals to God. They were supposed to offer the best, with no bones that had ever been broken, with no blemishes, with no blindness, with no illness, with no deafness. They were supposed to offer the best animals, and yet they were offering the sickly and the lame. Keep reading in verse 8. He says, offer it now unto thy governor. Will he be pleased with thee, or accept thy persons, saith the Lord of hosts? And now I pray you, beseech God that he will be gracious unto us. This hath been by your means. Will he regard your persons, saith the Lord of hosts? Who is there even among you that would shut the doors for naught? Neither do ye kindle fire on mine altar for naught. I have no pleasure in you, saith the Lord of hosts. Neither will I accept an offering at your hand. So listen, the sacrifices did need to be done. The offerings did need to be given. The doors did need to be opened. The fire did need to be burned. But before all of that, God wanted their hearts. If your heart is not right, but you're still serving God, then the sacrifice is not right. Wasn't that what Cain found out? Was that his heart was not right. He wanted to give God what he wanted to give God. And did he give a sacrifice to God? He did. Was it the sacrifice that God wanted? No. And the problem was Cain's heart. The problem in Malachi was the people's hearts, because God wanted their hearts before the sacrifices. And so David is saying, look, God, your wonderful works are amazing. Your thoughts towards us are unspeakable of how amazing and wonderful they are. And they're so good that you don't even want the sacrifices and offerings first. You want my heart. And David's past, he had a past of giving his heart to the Lord. Go back to Psalm chapter 40, if you kept your place there. Let me get a drink real quick. Psalm chapter 40, look at verse 7. Then said I, lo, I come. In the volume of the book, it is written of me. So in the books, this is what was written about David. This is what his history was. Look at verse 8. I delight to do thy will, O my God. Yea, thy law is within my heart. I have preached righteousness in the great congregation. Lo, I have not refrained my lips, O Lord, thou knowest. I have not hid thy righteousness within my heart. I have declared thy faithfulness and thy salvation. I have not concealed thy loving kindness and thy truth from the great congregation. David didn't hold anything back when he was preaching about God. David said, look, I have a history of giving you my heart. Yes, he wanted to give the sacrifices and the offerings, but his heart was given to God first. And he said, that's my history, God. I've preached about you in the great congregation. I have sung your praises in front of people. God, I know who you are. David was able to do these things in verses 6 through 10. He preached about God's righteousness. He told people about the Lord. David was able to do that because he knew the God from verses 1 through 5. David knew the God who lifted him up out of the miry pit. David knew the God who set him upon the rock and established his feet and heard his cry. And because of that, David, his heart was given to God. And then David changes his perspective from past tense to present tense. Look in verse 11. Withhold not thou thy tender mercies from me, O Lord. Let thy loving kindness and thy truth continually preserve me. For innumerable evils have compassed me about. Let me stop right there. We've talked about that a lot recently, haven't we? I've preached through the Psalms a couple times lately. And Brother Combs is preaching on Wednesdays through Job. We've talked about troubles and evils that can surround us. And it's overwhelming a lot of times. It's like you're in the stormy sea and you're clinging to a rock and it's the waves are getting higher and they're just pounding you and you don't know how long you can hang on because innumerable evils have surrounded you. Outward evils have surrounded you. Trouble from other places are about to overwhelm you. But it doesn't stop there. Look again in verse 12. He says, for innumerable evils have compassed me about. Mine iniquities have taken hold upon me, so that I am not able to look up. They are more than the hairs of mine head. Therefore my heart faileth me. Now wait a minute. It's easy to understand how we can be surrounded by trouble. It's easy to see that. I've been troubled before, haven't you? Haven't you ever been in a time where there's all these problems and you don't know how you can possibly solve them? But David's saying, on top of all the outward problems, my inward iniquity has taken hold upon me. So what is iniquity? This is one way of thinking about iniquity. Imagine you have a muddy puddle and you stick your hand into the puddle. Well, the act of choosing to stick your hand in is sin. When you pull your hand out, all the mud and the dirt that is left on your hand, that's iniquity. You're not still sinning, but you're still dirty from the sin. So David is saying, my iniquity from my sin has overwhelmed me. It's more than the hairs of my head. Imagine with me that you just bought a house. Maybe you hadn't been able to see the house before, or you thought, it's a fixer-upper, but I can fix it up. It'll be a good house. And so you walk into the house, and the stench just hits you immediately. There's mold and mildew and trash. And as you walk farther into the house, the carpet is squishy, and the wood is rotting, and there's maggots and roaches and mice are running rampant, and you pick up a trash bag and there's more trash underneath it, and you every time you pick up furniture and move it out, it's the carpet is worse under the furniture, and every time you pick up books or magazines, it's just filthy underneath all of them, and the dirt is everywhere. It's disgusting, it's filthy, and that's iniquity that has overtaken you. That is more than the hairs of your head. That's the idea that David is saying. He's saying, my iniquity from my sin is everywhere I look. Every time I think I'm getting closer to God, every time I think that I'm making progress in my life, it's like I move one thing and there's 10 other things underneath that are just signs of my iniquity. And David says, look at my problems on the outside. Look at my iniquity on the inside. God, I can't possibly handle all this. God, I know what you've done for me in the past. You lifted me up out of the miry clay. You set my feet on the rock, and I've praised you for it. I have a history of praising you for it. But God, look at all these. Look at these evils. Look at my iniquity. My heart is failing me, God. You know, if it stopped right there, if it was up to David to solve those problems, he would have a very good reason to be afraid. He would have a very good reason to be discouraged, wouldn't he? But when David compared two different things. He compared, on one hand, God and his character, and on the other hand, his outward evil and his inward iniquity. David compared these two things. And so what do you think when David compared them was his conclusion? He said, okay, I have God over here and I have evil and my iniquity over here. What's the outcome going to be? I believe the answer is there in verse 17. It says, but I am poor and needy, yet the Lord thinketh upon me. David could take comfort and have hope, because even though he was poor and needy, God thought about him. God's thoughts were upon him. Even though David was, he couldn't solve the evil that was around him, and he was overwhelmed by his own iniquity, by his own filthiness from his sin, God still thought upon him. It wasn't about David. It wasn't about who David was. It was about who God is. And so David said, but I am poor and needy, yet God thinketh upon me. You know, if it was up to you, you'd have a good reason to be discouraged. I think the older I get, the more I realize just how little control we have over life. You know, I'm only 23, so I'm just a child compared to some of you in here, especially my parent. But we can't control any of the outward evils around us. No, I mentioned COVID earlier. No one had any control over that. Our government didn't have control over that. We couldn't control what was going on. And then in the midst of all of our evils, we want to spend time with God and we want to get closer to God, and we just realize just how permeating our iniquity is from our sin, just how filthy we are. And you know, if it was up to us, we would have a good reason to be afraid, wouldn't we? We would have good reason to be discouraged. Yes, I would understand being discouraged, but it's not up to us. Because even though we are poor and needy, God thinks upon us. And we can take comfort and have hope in that fact. You know, there wasn't a lot that the prodigal son could do about the famine. He was still hungry, just like everybody else. He was stuck with the pigs. He couldn't get a place to live. He couldn't get a nice meal to eat. He couldn't get nice clothes to wear. He was suffering just like everybody else was suffering. You know what? He was filthy and smelly because of his sin. The iniquity, so his sin was abandoning his father, leaving his father. His iniquity came from the pigs. And he was filthy and disgusting and surrounded by evils on all sides. But the Father could help him. And even though he was poor and needy, his Father thought upon him and cared for him. He brought him up from the famine. He took care of him, and he set him in his home where he would have food to eat. And he cleaned him from his iniquity. Even though the Father knew what he had done, he had forgiven him and he cleansed him from his iniquity, from his sin. Aren't you glad that you have a Heavenly Father who does the same thing for you? You know, we have sinned. That's true. The Bible says, for all have sinned to come short of the glory of God. And even though we've been saved, we still have iniquity. You understand that. But even though we have iniquity, God cares for you. But I am poor and needy, yet the Lord thinketh upon me. Thou art my help and my deliverer. Make no tarrying, O my God.